This is Bill Munhausen with another episode of What Makes Sense. I am titling this episode, The Ultimate Solution, because all of the political and sociological issues we face really begin with the spiritual condition of Americans. Although secular people may consider the solution unacceptable, even they would agree that racism, homosexuality, transgenderism, socialism, avarice, injustice, war, and rebellion would virtually disappear if every citizen obeyed the God of the Bible. Therefore, obedience to the God of the Bible is the ultimate solution to the world's problems, if only we could find a way to convince people to accept the solution. I'm going to start off by reading someone else's message. Marshall Foster calls it America at the Tipping Point, and begins by quoting Isaiah 58:12 from the Hebrew Scriptures. It reads, "And your ancient ruins shall be rebuilt. You shall raise up the foundations of many generations." It's the spirit of optimism, but it's challenging for the secularly minded. It's a call to restore America's godly foundations. Here is the rest of Foster's message. As Americans, it's time to dust off our Bibles and rediscover the loving laws of God. As G.K. Chesterton says, "If men will not be governed by the Ten Commandments, they shall be governed by the 10,000 commandments." In America today, as the Ten Commandments have been ignored, the 10,000 commandments have grown to hundreds of thousands of laws, resulting in chaos and confusion. America is at the tipping point between the two major conflicting law systems of men and nations, kings or rulers' law versus God's law. America was founded upon a simple and yet profoundly effective infrastructure built upon voluntary obedience to God's law. The result was blessing, prosperity, and personal liberty as the world had never before experienced. Taxes were low, laws were few, and life and charity were focused at the family and community level. But the past few generations have been seduced back toward the oppressive top-down ruler's law, which has dominated most nations of the world. Throughout history, this system has always enslaved a people through an elaborate network of bureaucracy and rulers' laws, eventually leaving them dependent upon government for everything. The rulers often make godlike promises, always exempting themselves from their own onerous laws and taxes. The answer to this juggernaut of rulers' law has been the same throughout history. The only source of liberty is God and His Word. Let us briefly track the impact of the earliest Christian believers as they faced the cruelty of Rome on the one hand, and the anarchy and barbarity of the pagan tribes of Europe on the other. They ultimately outlasted and defeated the Roman Empire and laid the foundations for Western civilization. They turned the world upside down by following their Lord's strategy of servant leadership. They started by first living out their faith through obedience to God's laws in their homes, businesses, and church fellowships. Then they extended charity in many ways, including feeding the poor and saving abandoned babies left to die. They evangelized the unbelievers and established God's law as the basis for all their societal institutions. In the first century, when these believers first came to evangelize the British Isles, England was still a Roman colony. Over time, Rome and its rulers' law crumbled and the Roman legions left England. But the Celtic believers continued to follow the laws of the scripture to create a simple, fair, legal system and society structure. These ancient believers followed this biblical infrastructure to progressively displace the pagan traditions of the Celtic clans and the heavy-handed tyranny of the Roman Empire. In the 4th century, pagan barbarians from Ireland attacked and destroyed a village of Celtic Christians in England. They captured a 16-year-old boy named Patrick. For 6 years, Patrick was a slave who tended sheep for a cruel Druid chieftain in the frozen fields of Northern Ireland. Patrick had not taken seriously the deep Christian faith of his family. Now in his despair, he cried out to God. He prayed over 100 times a day and nearly as much at night. He grew close to Christ in his suffering. Patrick became repulsed by the witchcraft and human sacrifice of the Druid priests. Eventually, God provided an escape back to England, where he prepared for the ministry. Later, Patrick returned to evangelize the lost people of Ireland who had enslaved him. His fearless courage and faith in Christ impressed the king so greatly that he was given free passage to minister throughout the island. Patrick led in the conversion and baptism of over 120,000 Irish people and planted over 300 churches. He converted the nation of Ireland to Christianity without bloodshed. Patrick was the first public figure in history to speak and write against slavery. He virtually abolished slavery in Ireland. Wherever he set up a church, along with the books of the Gospel, Patrick gave them the Book of the Law of Moses, which compiled scriptures to be applied to civil matters. This book became the basis of all social organization, including the family, welfare, economics, and government. This Celtic book was the first essential civil document of liberty that led Christian civilization to far surpass Rome. What was the result of Celtic Christianity in the British Isles? The Irish, who had been barbarians controlled by Druids, now became Christians. The Scottish, English, and Irish believers became the founders and evangelists for the conversion of all of Europe from barbarism. For the first time since ancient Israel, God's word became the law of the land. The results were civility, charity, monogamous marriage, and successful family life, limited civil government, private property rights, the development of education, and the publication and preservation of the books of antiquity. America was built on this same foundation, which was the fundamental reason for our unprecedented blessings. May we be encouraged that if God can use a formerly unbelieving teenage slave to bring liberty and civilization to the barbarous Irish, he can use us to restore liberty to the most well-established Christian nation in history. So that's the message in which Marshall Foster characterizes the conflict as a choice between two options, ruler's law and God's law. Unfortunately, Americans seem to be divided 50-50 between those choices, and that divide is an impasse because the current version of ruler's law is purposefully contrary to God's law. The current ruler's law is socialism, and socialists cannot tolerate anyone following a different ruler like God, so they undermine God's place in authority. For that reason, we see secularists suggest evolution as the rightful view of origins instead of creation. They redefine family away from being husband, mother, and child. You weren't born male or female, but were merely misgendered at birth. All of these seemingly foolish concepts have been introduced to undermine God's pronouncements of what is true. But aside from these philosophical and religious conflicts playing out, American society has fragmented into myriad small ways, all centering on the issue of interpersonal trust. I just attended a meeting at our county commission to talk about automated license plate readers, and the majority of attendees were adamantly opposed to their use. The system is being proposed by a company called Flock Safety. Several attendees wondered whether we are the sheep in the flock being kept safe. Anyway, the Flock Safety representative did his best to explain what their system does and to allay the fears of a hostile audience. The system uses specialized cameras combined with software. The cameras are placed along roadways at strategic locations, and they constantly photograph the rear end of every passing vehicle. The software examines and decodes the license plate number and stores the photograph with the plate number as an identifier. Simultaneously, it checks the plate number and vehicle description against a law enforcement database and reports to local law enforcement any vehicle which has a match in the database. The system has an obvious benefit for local police as a quick and passive way to determine if a vehicle that may have been used in a crime enters a community. This is especially important considering the difficulty every law enforcement entity is having attracting and retaining police officers. It's dangerous work, and the pay isn't great. And Flock is a tool to replace humanized in patrol cars with robotic help. Nevertheless, the citizens were adamantly opposed to it because it feels like surveillance by the government, and we think of our cars as an extension of our homes, our personal space. People questioned what information would be kept in the database, whether the data goes to federal authorities, and can the data be misused. Several years ago, a law enforcement authority suggested that vehicles with Tea Party and Don't Tread on Me bumper stickers should receive special attention as potential domestic terrorists. Those memories linger in the public consciousness and make trust impossible. The Flock Safety Guide made another attempt to address the public's distrust. The data is only retained for 30 days. The local police own the data. It's stored on third-party AWS servers. There is a publicly accessible web portal that anyone can use to log into the system to observe how it's used. Nothing changed anyone's mind, but only generated more questions. Isn't AWS Amazon, and won't they make data available to federal agencies like other social media companies have? And isn't it common for successful small companies like Flock to get bought out by larger tech companies that expand what the product does and sell the data? The slippery slope arguments abound because this group of citizens believe that abuse of power is inevitable, and even our local government isn't to be trusted. Frankly, I can't blame them, because this just happened in another nearby small town. The Osage Beach Board of Aldermen unanimously approved the first reading to adopt administrative search warrants. If approved, it would allow city officials to obtain a warrant to enter private property without the owner's permission. It was also reported that Osage Beach is not alone in seeking such enforcement tools. The city of Camdenton has had administrative search warrants on its books for 12 years, although they've never been used. The rationale for such warrants is to allow city officials to investigate possible ordinance violations that would otherwise be invisible from the outside of a residence or commercial building. However practical or necessary such an ordinance might seem, the Fourth Amendment of the Bill of Rights guarantees that, quote, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue except upon probable cause. The meaning is clear. Government officials must have probable cause in order to obtain a search warrant, and must not obtain a search warrant unless they have probable cause, the standard for all search warrants. So-called administrative search warrants violate that standard. For the most part, Missouri law adheres to the American tradition that a person's home is his castle, and that the individual can defend the home from intrusion and violation of privacy. Administrative search warrants put law enforcement in collision with Missouri law and constitutional guarantees. This has come to a head because of the underlying issue of regulatory overreach. Most city ordinances were created to ensure that each citizen's rights and practices do not violate the rights of others. However, the sheer volume of modern regulatory authority has led administrators to look for more efficient enforcement tools. The Cornell Law School offers this example on their website. The Environmental Protection Agency may obtain an administrative warrant to investigate whether a factory is complying with waste dumping requirements. They do not need to make a case to a judge that laws are being broken. In days gone by, law enforcement would observe how a business was dumping waste to determine violation. With administrative search warrants, they can enter a building or a business at their convenience to investigate whether there are violations. They no longer have to spend investigative time observing and gathering evidence. At the heart of these administrative search warrants is the trust issue. Just as the EPA expects factory owners to evade the law, The officials of our small towns believe their citizens are secretive cheaters who can't be trusted to follow the rules. Just as the citizens distrust government, government distrusts its citizens. This is a terrible development in a country based on the principle that government serves the will of the people. Early in this episode, I quoted, as the Ten Commandments have been ignored, the 10,000 commandments have grown to hundreds of thousands of laws. What's happened with the EPA and the city of Osage Beach is they both have so many regulations on the books that, one, citizens cannot know what all the rules are, and two, citizens resent the complexity of laws and passive-aggressively ignore them. Let me quickly return to the automated license plate readers again, because you might have gotten the wrong impression that citizen distrust of government is unfounded. The situation in London, England came across my desk as I was writing this episode. A government program called ULEZ was first introduced in central London in 2019, before being further expanded in 2021 to the city's inner suburbs, and now expanded to cover all of Greater London. It uses automated cameras to enforce regulations declaring London a low-emission zone in a rather arbitrary way because it targets vehicles older than a certain age, under the assumption that they are the worst polluters. What seemed like an innocent attempt to reduce pollution has resulted in thousands of cameras being vandalized by angry motorists who see the law as targeting the poor, but it also impacts wealthier classic car collectors. ULEZ generates automatic fines each time an offending vehicle comes into view of its cameras, accomplishing this by reading the license plate, identifying who owns the vehicle, and recording the infraction, all without the need for a law enforcement officer to see the crime in person. You can see how Americans might perceive automatic license plate readers as a tool that might evolve over time to track individuals for whatever purpose politicians might decide. Such examples are how we got to this point of distrust, and we need a plan to overcome it. There was a time, and I was there in that time, when Americans were unified as one nation under God. Even when I was not a follower of the Lord, I lived and thrived within the American Christian consensus. It means that most of the people I met in my community had the law of God written in their hearts. They were unlikely to steal, not just out of fear of being caught by mortal man, but out of fear of the Lord, who they knew was their ultimate judge. In case you're skeptical, I'll admit that not all Americans were true Christians. Some were merely operating out of superstition, not fully believing there really was a God, but even the criminally minded had an inkling that the superstition might be true. You might say they were hedging their bets and moderating their criminal behavior just in case. However, many Americans truly believed and honored their God by following his commandments. Jesus summarized God's law to be loving God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and to love your neighbor as yourself. It was a profound concept far superior to the law of the ruling class of men in Jesus' day. A Jesus follower didn't need a list of rules to know how to behave because God's law was written in their hearts, and God's Spirit kept them constantly reminded. If you had harmed another, you had broken the law. But don't think of the modern concept of hurting someone's feelings, because someone who truly loves you will tell you the truth, even if it's painful. If you withheld the truth, no matter how painful, you had also broken the law. Fast forward to today, and we live in a world where half of all Americans have rejected God or believe his existence is a fantasy or just don't want to think about it. Although modern secular humanists, by that I mean atheists, claim to be moral people, their morality has no foundation. It is simply what they've decided individually. For a long time, atheists adopted their morality from the Christian consensus because they were raised that way and it seemed good to them. They could accept the prohibition against murder, but issues like stealing and coveting and adultery quickly became situational. Maybe it began with Robin Hood, who is a criminal, but he only stole so he could help the poor and oppressed. I'm not saying that Robin Hood was wrong, but merely that right and wrong became blurred as a result of modern storytelling. What happened next was predictable, as people began to question more of what they considered the old morality. They rationalized that having sex with someone other than their spouse was merely a pleasurable episode instead of a sin. They could cheat on their taxes if they could get away with it. Violence and murder are justified if it's directed against someone who has perpetrated an injustice. It was easy to trust people when they shared a common morality and when their behavior was more predictably benevolent. Once morality fragmented, trust became impossible, because we can't know the moral compass of anyone we meet. Meanwhile, our governing authorities recognized that they could no longer depend on the goodness of citizens, so they enacted more and more laws to control their behavior. However, citizens in a formerly free society reacted against the lawgivers. When cities put more police in minority neighborhoods to address increasing crime, the citizens in those neighborhoods saw the police presence as racially motivated and therefore immoral. The more that citizens resisted, the more harsh were the police tactics. This is why people in Camdenton are opposed to new law enforcement technology. They don't trust the ones who will use or possibly abuse it. I titled this episode "The Ultimate Solution" because there is only one true solution to fix America, thereby freeing ourselves from the climate of distrust permeating our lives. The solution is a spiritual revival and nothing less. I composed a key opinion a while ago about the purpose of education. Here's a quote. "A nation, to become a people, needs to insist on creating a public sphere with shared knowledge that unifies its population and enables its members to work together, communicate effectively with one another, and feel loyalty to one another." Many people think that a nation is merely a political structure, but true nationhood represents a people group joined, not just by a constitution, but by shared values and history with common morality as its foundation. The former Soviet Union learned this lesson in spades. Their complete name was the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, with several true nations organized into a pseudo-nation by force. One of the lessons of the Soviet Union was you can't maintain a political entity comprised of different nations because those nations don't share the same values and history. Russia and Ukraine were a couple of those nations, and we can see today how that's working out. When you hear the term diversity as something good to promote, think again. Unity is far superior to diversity. In addition to the problem of uniting different nations is the problem of maintaining any nation without a shared morality. The communist world tried to manufacture a new secular humanist morality and impose it on the people, but that strategy never succeeded, perhaps because it was understood to be a strategy. People intuitively understood secular humanism to be merely the opinions of men, the ruler's law, and it doesn't inspire them. That's why we drive a little faster than the speed limit in our cars, because we know the speed limit is just a human rule that we can violate when nobody's looking. What has worked to unite morality for millennia in Western civilization has been God's law over ruler's law, and that is why a Christian spiritual revival is the ultimate solution. The good news is that revival may be well underway, as there has never been a time when so many thinking Christians have been involved in media outreach to the nation. Christian media has become very different from the church preaching media of the past. People like Eric Metaxas, David Barton, Charlie Kirk, Lance Wallnau, and others are offering solutions in every area of life, from politics to entertainment. This is the mission of Key Radio also, to broadcast content that draws people toward the life-affirming message of the gospel. I read a book a while ago called The Tipping Point, whose premise is that social change happens when an idea is consistently communicated until it reaches a tipping point where many people have come to believe it. The idea transitions from being a new idea to being widely accepted just because it has been heard enough to feel normal to people. Media can have that effect even with a seemingly old idea like the gospel. permeate the airwaves until the public accepts the gospel as normal. The question for our time is whether the Christian church is up to the task of transforming nations. In the first century after Jesus, a few disciples spread the Christian gospel throughout the Roman Empire, much like Patrick did in Ireland. They didn't have the World Wide Web or even radio and TV. The gospel was spread person to person through pretty ordinary people. The modern church has merely to commit itself to do the same, but with the benefit of modern technology to facilitate the process. There are, however, steps and strategies that are more encompassing than personal witness. We have to gain control of public education so we can inspire the younger generation in total. We must encourage Christian young people to strategize their careers, to work in education and also enter academia, the sciences, and the entertainment industry to influence public education at its foundation. We have to repurpose our institutional churches to be centers of evangelism rather than private clubs that rarely reach out to the community. That may mean churches have to consolidate so that they have the manpower and financial resources to so completely support God's people that those outside the church will become envious. We don't draw outsiders in by giving them free stuff. We draw them in by demonstrating how churches support their members. Let's bring missionaries back to America, because Americans need saving just as much as foreigners do, and we can accomplish more closer to home. America has been the envy of the world's people, but it will not be if Americans slide further into apostasy. I believe these four things, communicating Christianity through media, discipling the nation's youth, focusing on evangelism, and concentrating on our own nation's problems, are the key to saving our future. But one last thing. Following Jesus is not a strategy. I realize it may seem like I am merely laying out rational steps, but it must be a heartfelt call. If you are not yet a disciple of the Lord, seek him with all your heart. Only by making him Lord can you be drawn to do his will. Thanks for joining us today. Until next time, go out and do good.